Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. It is Monday, July 10th. Hope you enjoyed a very nice sunny weekend here in Vancouver. My name is Magnus Thiewald and I'm your host for this hour of the program. We have some nice stuff for you. We have a rerun of our interview with Burnaby Councillor Richard Lee and Burnaby staff person Lisa Codd about a project the city of Burnaby is working on to create an apology to the Chinese citizens of Burnaby for a lot of really questionable policies that were enacted in Burnaby quite officially. You know, part of a larger sort of set of anti-Asian, anti-Chinese policies that were happening in Canada starting in the late 19th century and into the 20th century. And the city of Burnaby is looking at reviewing that history and making an amends with the policy. And we'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. We have looking at Lyme coming up towards the latter part of the show. Speaking with Jordan Tesluck. I really quite enjoy these Lyme discussions, although it's often very specifically about Lyme disease in particular. There's a lot of really interesting brain science that gets discussed as part of these discussions, which is, you know, more broadly applicable to a lot of situations, not just Lyme. And, of course, it's just fascinating in its own right. You know, there's so much research going on into the brain and how it works these days with sort of new discoveries and layers of information being revealed, and all really quite fascinating. So that's coming up the latter part of the show. We have Bird Note, and we're gonna have some great music and a bunch of other stuff. So stay tuned, and let's just dive right into our interview about with Richard Lee and Lisa Codd. Joining me today is Richard Lee, councillor for the city of Burnaby, and Lisa Codd, who's part of Burnaby staff. And we're here to talk about a project the city is undertaking to issue an apology to its Chinese Canadian community over past policies and laws that the city of Burnaby enacted in the past century that were quite discriminatory. Perhaps we can start up. You can tell me what was the genesis of this project and why now?
All right. Thank you for the opportunity to answer that question. The city for quite a number of years now, starting mainly around 2017, has been actively researching Chinese Canadian history in Burnaby and sharing that information with the public. And part of that research surfaced past discriminatory policies and practices of our local government in Burnaby. And as a result, a community group, the Burnaby Intercultural Planning Table, in cooperation with the Coalition Against Racism, contacted our municipal council and suggested that we undertake a process like this. Council was very supportive of that suggestion, and so we're proceeding.
Right. So the whole project is about more than just an apology. There's an effort to do research and compile the history of these policies and but also to engage the community in the discussion. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, I think it's important when you're apologizing to someone that you are also connecting to ensure that apology is meaningful and that actions are taken in support of the apology. Similar apology processes at the City of Vancouver and New Westminster as well have included community engagement work to consult with the community, raise awareness of the issues, and also to identify legacy actions such as commemoration project that can support ongoing engagement with the community.
So what kind of policies, what kind of things have been discovered through this process? I've heard about some of them and they're kind of eye-opening in some cases.
Yeah, and there's still research to do. I think we're in our preliminary stage with our research, but there's a number of ways that as a local government, Burnaby discriminated against people of Asian descent. So some of those included joining advocacy efforts of other municipalities to try to exclude Asian immigration, for example. And some of those other actions targeted Chinese businesses. So bylaws that restricted trade licenses for greengrocers and piggery operators, which were a couple of the common businesses that Chinese Canadians had in the early part of the 20th century. And we also are the fourth bylaw. So this was a priority of Burnaby's early municipal council. The fourth bylaw enacted by Burnaby restricted employment of Asian Canadians by the local government or by anyone contracting services to the local government. And that bylaw remained in effect until 1953.
Yeah, I read another story about a bylaw that was proposed by a Vancouver-based chapter of the KKK and then adopted, well, maybe not a bylaw, but a policy adopted by Burnaby and I presume other municipalities in the area.
Yeah, so sometimes groups like the KKK advocated for discriminatory policies, and they would write to various levels of government and ask them to endorse their efforts. And yeah, our council did endorse those efforts. If I'm remembering them right, that was an effort to exclude Asian immigration.
It's interesting because we've heard a lot over the number of years about the policies put forth at the national and the provincial level. It's really interesting to see these similar things having happened at the municipal level. I guess in many ways, it's not really surprising, but it really is interesting to see what was going on. And I think one of the things about municipal governments that they have, in many cases, so many more points of contact with their citizens on even a daily basis that these kind of policies put in at the municipal level can be in many ways more impactful.
Yeah, and I'm sure that Councillor Lee could definitely speak to sort of the layers of discrimination by all levels of government that took place in the past.
Yeah. thank you. As you know, and many people know that the federal government actually had the Chinese Exclusion Act at that level. So from early, probably 1885 to 1923, the head tax was imposed to the Chinese community at that time. And actually my grandfather paid for the head tax in 1913 to get into Canada as a farmer. So at that time, the head tax was imposed starting from $50 and increasingly quickly increased to 100 and then went up to $500. I heard that at that time, $500, you can buy two building lots in Chinatown, Vancouver. Yeah. So that's a lot of money to pay back. So I think over the years, this kind of discriminatory policy had been redressed in the federal level in the 2007, and then provincially, we also did a recognition 2013, 14, in that period, so that those discriminatory laws in the province level, well, we take out quite a few of those injustice law in the legislature in DC, and then redress that. We also just heard that Vancouver, of course, had redressed that, and the U.S. Did that as well. So I think this is a time between Vancouver and the U.S. Burnaby. We are going to do something on that front. So I'm very pleased to hear that. This is one page of a dark history in Canadian history. We would like to see what kind of laws and bylaws in the city level that had been passed or implemented. So I think this is a good way, as 100 years of the Chinese Exclusion Act, because after 1923, the city, the whole country actually implemented that federal law to ban actually immigration for the ordinary Chinese to come to Canada. So to 1923 until 1947, after the Second World War, that because of the Chinese veterans, their contribution defending Canada's value, as well as went to the war for Canada, that the Canadian government actually saying that now you can vote, you can have Canadian citizenship, that kind of thing. So I think for 100 years, I think this is a day that we should commemorate and see that those and just this discriminatory laws won't see their lights again in the future.
So, I mean, what does it feel like to you personally as a member of the Chinese community to learn about these kind of policies enacted by the city you now represent on council?
Yeah, the KKK resolution passed by the council, endorsement by the council at that time. That was the first, I mean, I just heard about that a few months ago. So those are new to me. And I think some of those histories, we need to learn more as a community to see what kind of actually bylaws will pass as a city. So I think it would be interesting that our next generation will learn about the history. And also the community itself, we see that now we are really fortunate to live in a harmonious society. We should treasure our position, our daily life, and also the rights and freedom in this good Canadian society.
Have you heard from members of the community in response to this initiative?
From the newspaper, the Chinese Canadian newspaper, they also publish news about this initiative from Burnaby. They are very supportive. I believe also there are some people would like to be sitting in the committee as well to see how they can contribute to this process. We learned that Burnaby also will be publishing a book about Chinese Canadians in the city, and the community is really positive on seeing the result of that book, the contents, etc. So I think thanks to the city staff and the council, and they look into this issue and very supportive of these initiatives.
In many ways, all these bylaws and policies and regulations enacted by the city and the other level governments must have really only been, in many ways, the tip of the iceberg, because when all the levels of government are putting in these kinds of policies and whatnot, that must really have emboldened individuals and even, you know, people working for the city to express and act on their racist attitudes. So you mentioned it, a dark period in history. You know, it spreads out and becomes bigger than just a matter of policy and bylaw. So what's the timeline for the completion of the project?
We'll be going out to consult with the community in the fall and also in 2024, and we're expecting the formal apology in 2025. It's important to take the time to do the consultation and that engagement with the community. And some of this information is a surprise to members of the community. So I think we need to take the time to be able to get the word out about what happened and what is happening.
When it is offered, what will the apology look like? Will there be a public ceremony, or has that been determined yet?
That is something we'll work with the community on. I think every community will have its own desire of what they want that apology to look like. In terms of the level of formality, the languages that it needs to be delivered in, the place where it might be delivered in. So there's still a lot that we want to work out, but we want to make sure that we're engaging with the community to make those decisions.
And will there be any lasting legacy or a public display or memorial?
So that also is something that will come out of the consultation to find out what those legacy projects might look like. Although, I mean, the city, as Councillor Lee mentioned, has taken on a number of projects to commemorate Chinese Canadian history in Burnaby, including a book that will be published later this year. And I think it's just important to remember that though we're talking about this incredible web of racism and discriminatory policies from all levels of government, including several local governments, that there's also these stories of incredible resilience of the Chinese Canadian community members. So we want to make sure we're also telling those stories of resilience and the way that community members contributed. And in Burnaby, a lot of that contribution was growing food. Chinese Canadian farmers grew, despite restrictions on land ownership, were able to farm an incredible amount of food that fed the region. Actually, yeah, and Councillor Lee's family was a farm family as well.
Yeah, actually, the Leung's family, they still operate in the South Burnaby.
Oh, nice.
So the Leung's family, they originally had a market garden in the Musqueam land, reserve land near Dunbar and Marine Drive. My grandfather actually farmed in that Musqueam reserve land for almost 30 years as a partner in a market garden, and so they leased the land from the First Nations and with a partner. And one time there are over, I think, 20 market gardeners in that area. So I heard many stories about the market gardeners. Larry Grant, senior, elder in that community, told me a lot of stories, and including he was playing in the Hong Kong Garden, Market Garden, and then that's our interaction with my grandfather. So I think that's some of the stories to tell. Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining me today. I think this is a really important project, and as we've seen from what has come forth so far, there's a lot of stuff that people did not know about, and it's important to shine a light on those things, and it's really great to see Burnaby doing this. Thank you for joining me today, Lisa Codd, with the City of Vancouver, and Richard Lee, Councillor with the City of Burnaby.
All right. Thank you.
And Richard Lee, Councillor with the City of Burnaby, both with the City of Burnaby. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, pleasure talking to you.
And that project of the City of Burnaby is going to be ongoing, and they're going to be doing, as was mentioned in the interview, various community engagement events collecting of stories and whatnot. There's more information available on the City of Burnaby website about it, and I think if you sign up for mailing lists or just check there to find out more about when relevant events are happening. And it's a really great initiative that would be nice to see more communities do. We've heard a lot about these policies as they were enacted at the federal and provincial levels of government. But, of course, in many ways, municipalities are the level of government that most directly affect and engage with citizens through so many things. And, of course, these kind of policies, you know, racist policies and anti-Asian policies enacted at the civic level, would have been something that people were encountering every day in life, living in this region at the time. Thanks to Lisa Codd and Richard Lee for speaking to me on that issue, and I think we'll be checking in with them again. Well, probably not till next year when things have moved along quite a bit, and maybe they're moving towards the final phase of the project. Let's take a quick look at the weather for the Vancouver region. It is pretty nice. Sun with a bit of cloud for the next couple of days. Highs up to 22 or 23 degrees. Later in the week, it clears right up, but the temperature stays pretty moderate still, 23, 24 degrees through till Sunday, which is pretty livable and very nice for getting out to the beach. And generally speaking, you know, with it cooling down to 14 or 15 degrees each night, it does make, you know, sleeping quite manageable. So that's what we have coming up for the next week throughout the Vancouver region. Basically, sun, tiny bit of cloud, and more sun. So an enjoyable week coming up. Here is a bird note.
This is Bird Note. Millions of seabirds known as auklets call the Aleutian Islands home. But this volcanic, Bering Sea archipelago can be a treacherous landscape. In August 2008, Kasatochi Island erupted in the middle of auklet breeding season, burying tens of thousands of chicks in hot ash. At first, the auklet's future on the island appeared bleak. But in just a few years, the birds had returned in force. Thousands nested within the innumerable chambers left behind by sea-cooled lava. Volcanic islands are perhaps the only places that provide the complex of cozy cavities that can host copious amounts of fist-sized auklets. And the largest threats to these auklets' roosts isn't actually geological, but gastrointestinal. Over the years, poop from millions of breeding seabirds acts as fertilizers for thick mats of vegetation that slowly cover the volcanic terrain, choking off access to their nest sites. Eventually, the colonies abandon the island entirely to seek out less green pastures. Today, Kasatochi Island is as popular an auklet breeding ground as ever, and it will likely stay that way until transformed again by countless tons of poop or lava or both. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rummel.
Alex Cuba is a BC-based artist working, former, as his name might imply, immigrated from Cuba and has lived in northern BC in Smithers for the last 15 years or so. He's won numerous accolades on the international music scene. A four-time Grammy nominee, for Best Latin Pop Album, and he won in 2022 with his album Mendo. He's also a five-time Latin Grammy nominee, including winning for Best New Artist, Best Tropical Song, Best Music Video, and Best Singer-Songwriter Album, winning four times with five nominations, which is pretty incredible. He has got a new album out, which is called El Swing Que Yo Tengo, and this is the title track. This is Alex Cuba right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Alex Cuba from his album El Swing Que Yo Tengo. And that was the title track. And hope you enjoyed that.
Hi, I'm ready to go.
You're hiking in that?
Of course. It's such a beautiful day, and I didn't want too many layers because I would only have to carry them.
You do realize these are mountains, right? It can go from sun to snow. and the paths are pretty rough and rocky, maybe too much for flip-flop.